How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It is Locked On NBA. I'm David Locke, host of Locked On NBA, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. So glad to have you with us. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you caught midseason report number one in the East. It had the Raptors and the Celtics, along with the Magic and the 76ers, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Detroit Pistons, Chicago Bulls. Today, the hosts of the Locked On Podcast Network of each of these individual shows will give you the breakdown, and it will be of the Bucks, the Knicks, then the Wizards, then the Hawks, then the Hornets, the Heat, and the Pacers. So possibility of a bunch of playoff teams in here and a lot of teams going in interesting directions and some really good hosts to break it down for you. What I've done is I've given them all kind of five questions. Those five questions are: what are the main storylines? Who's been better? Who's been less good than you expected? Are you a buyer or a seller? If you're a buyer or a seller, what are you trying to buy or sell? And then what's the key to success in the second half of the season? So that's the five questions. Each guy does about 5 to 7 minutes. We bang through all these teams for you. You'll know exactly what's going on. If you haven't caught the first version, you can go back when you're done and get that. Next week, Western Conference 1 and 2 will be published hopefully on Monday and Wednesday as well. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek does wonderful work to make ticket buying easy for you. Use the promo code LOCKED and get $20 back in your first purchase. And also, make sure that you... And as well from Indochino. Indochino does the made-to-order fabulous clothing, giving you some of the nicest fits out there. It's a fabulous program, and you can check out Indochino. I'll tell you more about them, but the promo code you want to know about there is LOCKED. So glad to have both those sponsors available. Appreciate it very much if you support them. Reminder, go subscribe to your favorite NBA team's Locked On podcast. Let's start it off. We'll start off with the story of the NBA season, maybe in some ways, the Milwaukee Bucks, because of the emergence of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Here are Eric and Frank.
Checking in for Locked On Bucks, I'm Eric Name, and with me as always is Frank Madden. And if you want to know anything about, I guess it's one of the biggest storylines of the year. If you want to know anything about Giannis, we are the place to go. We talk about Giannis literally every day. So if you want a reason why you should listen to us, why you should subscribe, Giannis. We cover Giannis more than anyone else. So we would be the place for that. That laughing you heard was Frank, and I'm going to give him the first big question that you may want to know from the outside. What is the number one storyline this season? Frank, I think I know what you're going to say.
I think you just gave it away. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo and his explosion onto sort of the superstar stage of the NBA. I think early before the season, I thought, you know, we both predicted he would score 20 plus points per game. We thought he would come close to his post All-Star break averages last year, which were 9 rebounds. He was up over 7 assists, even a couple blocks. We thought certainly all of those were in play, but not only is he doing those things, his assists are maybe down slightly, but he's scoring in bushels. And even with that usage rate spike, his efficiency has gone up even more. And you see what he's doing offensively. And that's really being matched by what he's doing defensively as well. Not only is he living up to that sky-high potential offensively, but he's doing it defensively as well. He's arguably, you know, one of the most versatile. I'm not even say arguably, Eric. I'm going to say he is one of the most versatile and impactful defenders in the game today. Yeah. You know, where a lot of young players like the Karl-Anthony Towns is and the Anthony Davis is, as awesome as those guys are, I think we're still kind of waiting for them to become the sort of impact players that Giannis has become right now. And that's been a huge factor in the Bucks' not only offense improving greatly, becoming for large portions of the first half here a top 10 offense, which I don't think we thought they were capable of doing without Chris Middleton, but also becoming a defense that is, you know, suddenly no longer well below average and actually above average and has again been top 10 for a large chunk of the season. So what he allows them to do both offensively, defensively, he's just a game changer. And, you know, you look at the advanced metrics, he's number one in a lot of those categories in the East, top three in the league, and things like PER, RPM, wins above replacement, you know, all these kind of advanced metrics you look at. Nobody has in many cases done what he's doing when you look at points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. And again, you just kind of wonder when is this guy going to stop improving, which kind of leads us into number two, the second question we have, which is who's better than we thought they'd be and who's been worse. And I'd say the easy answer, obviously, is Giannis. He'll be most improved, most likely in the entire league. But yeah, maybe there's some other guys we can look at here for who's been better than we expected.
Yeah, I definitely think Giannis would be the one. But other players, Greg Monroe, he's been great this year. He has been fantastic defensively. He's been a much more willing passer offensively. And I think when we recorded this preview before the season, we had mentioned, or maybe it wasn't this and it was a lockdown episode, but if there was something that could really help this Bucks season, it was Greg Monroe kind of figuring things out, kind of becoming the player everyone wanted him to be when the Bucks signed him. And that's kind of what's happened. He's been steals per 36. He's still leads all centers. And I think for a while he was in the top 10 in the league in steals per 36 minutes. So he's making an impact defensively. And sure, there are still problems. Maybe he's still a little bit too lead-footed at times, but he's making it up with some of those steals. He's getting blocks regularly, which is kind of insane. And literally, if you go through all of his per 36 numbers, he's playing the best basketball of his life. He's not playing the most minutes of his life. The Bucks have limited him to about 20 minutes, but in the last week, that's been closer to 28, 32 minutes. He's taking and soaking up some more of John Henson's minutes, and well, that's a pretty natural segue to who's been worse than you expected this season. And John Henson, he's really struggled for this Bucks team. It was kind of a situation where, okay, he can be the placeholder center, and I guess you could lump Miles Plumlee into that as well. Whoever the non-Greg Monroe center for the Bucks has been disappointing this year. They just haven't produced. They haven't found pick-and-roll chemistry with Giannis. They haven't been able to bring in and do a lot of the rim protection that you would really expect from those guys. It just has been disappointing. And also there, I think Dellavedova as well. Deli, obviously, I think he does a lot of great things. He moves the ball. He keeps the offense going. But he just hasn't been able to hit his shot this year. And I mean, that kills you when the margins are so slim for you to be an above average NBA player or to be an average NBA player, which he hasn't been this year. That kind of thing can kill you. And he's just been shooting terribly from three. He hasn't been able to make anything inside the 3-point arc either. And yeah, it's a struggle. So kind of combining all those things together, Frank, buyers or sellers at the trade deadline, what should the Bucks do?
I'll take option C and say they'll be opportunists at the deadline. I think when you look at this roster, you know, a lot of it is colored as well by the potential of Chris Middleton returning. I know we've been gun shy about projecting Chris Middleton to come back this year, coming back from about as bad of a hamstring injury, just tearing it completely, as you might expect anyone to get before the season. We weren't sure if he'd come back at all. There's been rumblings of him potentially coming back and maybe as soon as after the All-Star break, but certainly you don't want them taking any chances with that. But in any case, that, you know, he certainly would be the biggest acquisition you could ever potentially make if he were able to come back and, you know, even be anywhere close to what we saw the last couple of years from him. I think if you look at the positions where the Bucks might actually make some movement, you know, could they go out and try to buy maybe a combo guard who can be a shooter to complement Brogdon and Dellavedova, who obviously, you know, neither of those guys is a star type player. Neither of them is an explosive scorer or a guy who's going to pull up and hit jumpers in guys' faces. That kind of floor stretching might be of value. And then in terms of selling, I think certainly you look at the logjam they have at the center position. Miles Plumlee, for the second straight year, started the season not playing at all. Last year, he came on after the All-Star break, earned himself a rather inflated contract in the summer. This year, he's not playing at all. Henson is disappointed, and Monroe has bounced back and played very well. So it'll be interesting to see, does one of those guys get moved? I know Monroe is the guy that we've talked about getting traded for last year, and I think we're both in agreement that trading Greg Monroe at this point would probably not be a very wise move given everything that he means to this team. So who knows? Maybe you could trade John Henson. I don't think you're moving Miles Plumlee right now, but we will see. And I guess, you know, the type of player that we're willing to move, I think we talked about that, you know, again, shooting, guard help, that would be of value in the backcourt, maybe somebody on the wing. But, you know, again, with Chris Middleton coming back, that would probably be perhaps more of a short-term need, especially at the wing position where hopefully, you know, by next season, you're going to have Chris Middleton coming back. So, Eric, I ask you the last question. What is the key in the second half of this season for the Milwaukee Bucks to call this season a success? It's been a huge success, I'd say, so far, just being at 500, even with some disappointing losses of late. But anything you'd kind of highlight to make the second half of the season even more special?
Not being the worst team in the league in the clutch. That would be a total success to me. I don't even need them to be good for me to call it a success, just less terrible. And you look at the Bucks thus far this season, they're ninth in the league in net rating, but they're only 18-18. They just can't close out close games. And obviously from afar, you'll think, Eric, you're crazy. I saw Giannis hit a step back fadeaway at Madison Square Garden. Dude's got the clutch gene. He's got it all figured out. And, well, he doesn't. He did hit that shot, and we're kind of hoping here in Milwaukee that he would build off of that. And there was some struggles on Friday night on ESPN, closing in the clutch against the Knicks in that next game. And the Bucks have just struggled closing in crunch time. So if you can see them win some of those close games, and I think, like you said, it's an overwhelming success already. Giannis is a top 10 player in the league, maybe even, if you want to bump them up into the top five conversation, I'd allow it. So it's an overwhelming success already, no matter what happens in the second half. But with, I guess, updated expectations, not being terrible in the clutch would really help me feel like this is a successful season.
I would say the same. Keeping up sort of what they've been doing, I think if they can finish the season 500 or better, I think that would definitely exceed certainly our expectations. We'll see how the East shakes out in the playoff race. I think coming into the season, we didn't think the playoffs certainly were a necessity for this to be a good season. It was really about the development of Giannis and a guy we haven't talked about, Jabari Parker, who's also over 20 points a game and improving in pretty much all phases of his game right now. But as long as those two guys are playing well, and I think now the difference is, as you said, you know, playing well breeds expectations. I think if they didn't sneak into the East playoffs in at least the 7 or 8 spot, it would be a disappointment. But in the grand scheme of things, things certainly trending up in Milwaukee, and I think the big picture is certainly a very bright one. So I'm Frank Madden. That was Eric Name. Thanks so much for listening, and listen to us on Locked.
Thanks, Frank, and thanks, Eric, of Locked On Bucks. The Bucks sure are interesting, sitting at 19-18 as we launch this. In the seventh spot, Chris Middleton's supposed to be coming back. It sure feels as though they're ready to go. And I'll tell you, the one thing that jumps out to me about them is if they see the Celtics in the first round of the playoffs, they have the capability to match that five-out system the Celtics run, and I think could really, really give the Celtics a hard time coming up. You know, everyone's got their own matchups, but their ability to guard and guard Isaiah Thomas and have similar lineups that they could throw out there with Jabari and Middleton and Adetokounmpo and Dele, I think they could be tough. They're 9-9 against teams that are 500 or above. So they're sitting in 19-18. Every time you think they're about to take off, I think they kind of have one of those moments that makes you wonder yourself if possibly they're not going to take off. But if Middleton comes back, they're probably in pretty good shape. Their home road wins are 8. Their home losses are 9. So they're a -1 in that category. That's where most of the Eastern Conference teams are. Let's switch over to the Knicks, who this was recorded before the Derrick Rose AWOL situation. So it's interesting to listen to Jared Dubin in regards to, you know, that hadn't happened yet as he records this. And you can, but you can feel that things aren't right. They've lost 8 of 10. They've slipped to 11th. They're 17-21 overall in the season. I mean, that doesn't, beauty of the East, you're not out of it, but, you know, they've slipped to 2.5 backs of games back of Charlotte, who I think most of us thought was Charlotte, particularly we thought was a better team, but we'll hear about them coming up here in a little bit. And now they have this controversy that's taking place. But first, let's go to Jared Dubin and Locked On Knicks.
Hey guys, I'm Jared Dubin, the host of Locked On Knicks. Make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Knicks podcast for your insight into the New York Knicks Monday through Friday. I am here to answer some questions about the Knicks so far this season and throughout the rest of the year for our Locked On Podcast Network mid-season review. The number one storyline for the Knicks this season, I think, boils down to one of two things. It's either the fact that, you know, once again, for basically the 15th straight year, the Knicks cannot figure out a way to play defense. They have been in the bottom 10 or bottom 5 in defensive efficiency throughout basically the entire season. It's been a problem, especially against teams with attacking style guards, guys like John Wall, Kyle Lowry, Isaiah Thomas, even guys like Jeff Teague, Drew Holiday, have really given the Knicks a whole lot of problems. Basically, any point guard that's wanted to has gotten into the paint whenever they wanted, and that goes for off guards and forwards as well. It's really been a huge issue for the Knicks all season, and that weakness at the point of attack has led to overhelp, whether coming from underneath the basket or on the perimeter, and that's meant that they've given up far too many open looks right next to the basket or from three. They're in the top five in the league in giving up wide open threes. So that's been a big storyline throughout the year. And in addition to that, just the general inconsistency of the team. They started off, I believe, 3-6. They ran their record to 14-10, and at one point were in third place in the Eastern Conference. Then just recently they had a 6-game losing streak and had a great win, comeback over the Bucks, and then the next night got blown out by the Pacers. So really they've just been up and down all year. They outperformed their point differential earlier in the season, so that downswing was probably coming. But, you know, they were 14-10 at one point, and that's better than they've been in quite some time. Nevertheless, they did have that downturn again. It's really just been an inconsistent season basically from the jump. A couple guys that have been better and worse than expected. On the better end, I would say Justin Holiday has been a pleasant surprise. His shooting, his defense, his ability to work off the bounce. He is involved in a lot of the Knicks' best lineup combinations. Kyle Quinn, after a little bit of a rough start, has come on really strong with his rebounding, passing, shooting, even his defense, I think, has been better than expected. Kristaps Porzingis, especially early on, was, you know, incredible, not necessarily exceeding expectations quite as much as he did as a rookie, but certainly was, I think, better than people had any right to expect. I think he's a borderline all-star, if not a definite all-star, for his performance so far this season. His shooting from three especially has been very good. Derrick Rose, when working specifically off the drive, I think has exceeded expectations, especially early on when he was creating for himself. His shot-making around the rim was quite good. Billy Hernan Gomez, I think, has exceeded defensive expectations in particular. And the way he's gotten his offense going, I think, has been a little bit different than people expected also. On the worst side, I would say you definitely have to go with Carmelo Anthony. His shot-making has not been nearly as good as people would have expected. His defense definitely has left something to be desired as well. And the improved playmaking that he showed last year has not shown up quite as much either. Lance Thomas has been a bit of a disappointment on both sides of the ball. His three-point shooting especially has not really been where it was last year. His defense obviously has been hurt a little bit, but he's been a disappointment as well. And then Joakim Noah obviously is the big disappointment. I think even for people that were low on Noah coming into the season, he has not been nearly as good as people might have expected, especially on the defensive end, even if you include his little bit of an uptick lately. For the next question, are the Knicks buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? I posed this question to the Locked On Knicks Twitter followers actually last week. 83% of the followers said that the Knicks should be sellers, and 76% said that the Knicks should be sellers, even if they get over 500 by the time the trade deadline rolls around, which would require them to go four games over between now and then. I probably agree with that, but I'm not necessarily sure that the Knicks view themselves that way. I think that they probably fancy themselves Eastern Conference contenders still, based on the way they played earlier in the year, even if they were outperforming their point differential and their defense at that point. That's just, you know, that's the way they talked about themselves going into 2 years ago. It's the way they talked about themselves going into last year. It's the way they talked about themselves going into this year. And it's the way they talked about themselves throughout the season. So I don't think that they necessarily view themselves as big sellers, but obviously we'll see. Who would they be trying to sell? You know, that's the thing also about the Knicks being sellers. They don't really have very many good sell pieces. You know, maybe Kyle O'Quinn is somebody who's on a good contract and is playing well. I think Rose would probably be the best sell piece, but that would mean admitting that they made a mistake with that trade, and that seems extremely unlikely. Maybe Carmelo would waive his no-trade clause, but I also think that seems unlikely based on, like, everything he's said ever. So it's going to be interesting to see if they actually do go into sell mode, who they will look to trade. You know, it's not like they necessarily will want to move guys like Hernan Gomez or even Kuzminskis or Holiday. Obviously not going to move Porzingis. When you get beyond those guys, it's not like somebody's going to take on Joakim Noah's contract. I don't know why they would really look to trade Courtney Lee. He's a good fit for what they need at that position, and he's done, you know, basically what they signed him to do. So the sell pieces there are probably guys who they seem fairly unlikely to move other than O'Quinn. So it's going to be interesting to watch that. The key to calling the second half a success is it's got to be figuring out a way to play some defense. You know, you can't be a bottom five defense and be a successful team or a playoff team. They really need to get out of the basement defensively, whether that's changing up the lineups or changing up the defensive tactics or just guys improving their defense. That's really the thing that needs to turn around if the Knicks want to have success over the second half of the season. Once again, I'm Jared Dubin, the host of Locked On Knicks. Feel free to subscribe and leave a review and a rating on iTunes. Check us out on Audio Boom, obviously, as well. Thanks for listening.
Well, the Knicks are certainly their own interesting case. Before we look at what's going on with the Washington Wizards, Scott Brooks' team is beginning to play a great deal better. Let me tell you about the best way for you to purchase tickets. It's from SeatGeek. SeatGeek is an app on your mobile phone that takes the use of technology and makes everything easy in regards to buying tickets, which is a process that I have to say I've never thought was easy until now. In the old days, oh my gosh, I got to look at like 12 different sites, call a broker, figure out, nope, I don't have to do that anymore. Because by clicking on SeatGeek, I have all of those things in one spot for me. Second thing is I've got to go research what the stadium or the venue or what's about there and where's good sight lines and which are the great places where good tickets and which are the best purchase. Nope, I don't need to do that anymore either. Because SeatGeek goes and puts together for me a ticket score on every single ticket. So if I'm going to a concert or I'm going to a game or I'm going to an event, I use SeatGeek, and then I purchase it. There's boom, the tickets come right to me. It's guaranteed. It's secure. It's on my mobile phone. And here's the best part. With the promo code LOCKED, you get a $20 rebate sent to you from SeatGeek when you're done. So right now, go download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab. It's right there. Touch on it and enter in your promo code. And the promo code is LOCKED. All right, let's get a look at the Washington Wizards. Scott Brooks' team is beginning to play a great deal better, which has got to be very exciting. They're a playoff team now. They might be the one team in the Eastern Conference other than the big boys that have begun to play better and better. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They actually are making home court advantage in D.C. really, really impressive. They're 15-6 at home. They've not been very good on the road. And Ben Statting does a great job for us. So here's Ben with Locked on Wizards midseason report.
Hello and welcome to the Locked on Wizards podcast. Ben Standing here. Really appreciate you guys checking out the podcast, whether you're a Wizards fan or a national NBA guru. I really appreciate you guys checking out what's going on here with the Wizards. And for those of you that don't know me, again, my name is Ben Standig. I've been covering the Wizards and the NBA to varying degrees for the last decade or so for outlets, including CSN Mid-Atlantic, the Associated Press, and NBA.com. And I'm here today to help kind of get you caught up to speed with what's been going on with the Wizards and project a little bit ahead for the remaining 49 games. The Wizards at this point, 16-17. That doesn't sound necessarily that impressive, I guess, but it's all relative to where they were, which is why, for me, the number one first question is, what's the number one storyline for your season? I think for me, it's really just figuring it out. The Wizards, yes, you know about John Wall and you know about Bradley Beal, but this was a team that had a lot of changes going on from a year ago. They swapped out head coaches. Scott Brooks entered. They only had six players that returned from the opening night 2015-16 season. A lot of those were the main players, also including, again, John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, Marcin Gortat. But that said, or I guess I shouldn't say six players from the opening night. Six players from a year ago. In any event, you get where I'm coming with. They had a lot of turnover. We'll just leave it at that. And it took a little bit for a lot of things to gel. You had Scott Brooks trying to figure out his new team, how he was going to incorporate the entire new bench. You had John Wall coming off two offseason knee surgeries. You had Bradley Beal, who's been dealing with injuries throughout his whole career. You had the Wizards had acquired Markieff Morris at the trading deadline the previous season. Now he was going to start fresh. And then again, you had all these bench pieces. And by the way, the guy they spent the most money on this offseason, Jan Mahimi, has played 14 minutes this year because he's been dealing with knee issues. And it took a while for Brooks to figure things out. They got off to a really rough start, but they have since turned it around. A stretch of 9 wins in 12 games brought them all the way back to 500 by the end of 2016. And the Wizards have a ways to go. That said, the offense is a force. The defense is somewhat messy, but I think they've figured out enough that Scott Brooks has with his team, particularly how to kind of work with John Wall and Bradley Beal to get the most out of them. Same for Otto Porter and Marcin Gortat, that the Wizards can feel a lot better about themselves going down the stretch here than they did at the start. Question two, who is better than you thought and who has been less than expected? Better than I thought. I've been a big believer in Otto Porter. I covered him at Georgetown and I've basically covered him since then as well to the Wizards. And he started off slow, but at the end of last season, he picked up his game. He was a top 10 NBA in the league 3-point shooter over the, after the All-Star break last year. He's kept that up this year. What the evolution of why he's maybe a little bit better than I thought, he's shown a lot more aggressiveness during this improved stretch for the Wizards. He isn't just simply sitting in the corner waiting for John Wall to kick out the pass for the corner three. He's taking the ball in his hand a little bit more figuratively and literally, finding his own shots. I'm not going to say the Wizards have a big three with Wall, Beal, and Porter, but at times it almost feels like the Wizards have something along those lines. He's definitely been a big help. As far as the other end of that spectrum, I guess I'm going to have to go with Andrew Nicholson. Beyond Jan Mahimi, the next highest priced addition they made was signing the power forward out of St. Bonaventure, who had been with the Orlando Magic. In the preseason, Nicholson was making shots. He was, Scott Brooks dubbed him man of 1,000 moves. He had a lot of old school game, could get himself open in spots. We have not seen that much at all in the regular season. He has looked very slow on offense and defense. He's essentially completely out of the rotation at this point, which is problematic for a Wizards team. Again, doesn't have Jan Mahimi, really doesn't have a great front court depth behind Markieff Morris and Gortat. I thought Nicholson was going to be a bigger factor, at least if nothing else, as like a 3-point threat. Just has not been there. Question three, are the Wizards buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? I think this is interesting. I recently advocated on a Locked On Wizards podcast that when you consider what the Wizards have done to this point and what the way the Eastern Conference looks, that, yeah, I think you could make a case they should look to make a move to get upgrade players, say, 6 through 9 on the team, somewhere in that range. If they can get a bench, the bench has been better of late, but just still ordinary. If they can get a better bench, I don't see why the Wizards can't compete with anybody in the East not named Cleveland and maybe Toronto, but maybe even Toronto. Problem is, what are you giving up? They don't have much in the way of assets. You've got the number one pick for next year, but You also have Kelly Oubre, their 2015 first round pick, who oozes upside, but he's still not ready for prime time now. That's the problem. So I think they're buyers. Problem is, I don't know what they have to give up to make the move. As for question four, as for what type of player they might be looking for, the Wizards are kind of could use everything off the bench. Assuming that Jan Mahimi comes back, he's expected to come back some point in February. They're okay at center. With Porter, as long as Kelly Oubre is the one here, or if he's not the trade bait, then small forward, I think they kind of have covered. What they don't really have, though, is they could use some power forward depth a little bit behind Marquise Morris, but I think maybe most of all they could probably use some more guard play. Marcus Thornton, Trey Burke, two veterans. They've had some moments this year, but for the most part, I think they're probably getting overplayed to the level of their talent. The Wizards have some young guys like Tomas Satoransky and Sheldon McClellan behind them, but we're talking about two NBA rookies. I think the Wizards could use a third guard, basically, who could fill in when Wall and Beal either are out or sitting down.
All right, and lastly, the last question. What would make this second half of the season considered to be a success? You know what? I think if the Wizards can get to be a top four seed, I think you take that. Obviously, ideally, you'd win a playoff series beyond that. But if they can get to be a top four seed, I think you'd have to consider that a success. Look, the reality is LeBron James has been a roadblock for a decade or so in this conference. It's hard for any team outside of Cleveland or maybe Toronto to even consider this year, truly contending in the East. But I'm a believer that if you put yourself in the best position possible to take advantage of whatever opportunities open up, that is on some level a success. And right now, like I said, I think the Wizards starting lineup is pretty legit. If they can shore up their bench and play a touch better, play a little bit better on defense, stay healthy, why not them if opportunity arises, i.e. LeBron gets hurt or something to that effect? Long shot maybe, but that's what you got to hope for, I think, at this point for most teams. So a top four seed in the East would give the Wizards home court and put them above some of those other teams they're competing with. That's it for me. Ben Standig here. Really appreciate you guys listening to this edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Check us out on Twitter at Locked On Wizards. Until next time, see ya.
Well, when we did the regular season, I had the Wizards as the team that was going to win that division. I still think they've got a real good possibility. They're playing well, seem to be heading in the right direction. They got a little ground to make up. By the way, what's a division? Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Nobody really cares about divisions. The Atlanta Hawks, though, have won 8 of 10 and 7 in a row despite trading Kyle Korver and everyone thinking they were about to tank it. Well, Brad Rowland does Locked On Hawks, and he's going to have to give us a little breakdown of what they are doing because this team's interesting. They're 12-9 on the road. Their road wins are 12. Their home losses are 7. That's a +5. The Celtics, by the way, are only +6. The Raptors are only +6. Would lead you to believe they're on the verge of catching those teams, or at least could very easily. Playing against good teams, they've been very good. They're 11-7 against teams above .500. That's the third best in the Eastern Conference. So Atlanta, despite trading Kyle Korver and many people feeling that Paul Millsap is the next to go and that they're about to break this thing up and that they made a huge mistake with Dennis Schroeder instead of Jeff Teague, you know what? They're 22-16. Mike Budenholzer's crew has them rolling. I don't know. Let's see what Brad Rowland has to say about where the Hawks are headed as of the midseason report.
My name is Brad Rowland. I host the Locked On Hawks podcast each and every day covering the Atlanta Hawks. And I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on this season with the team. The number one storyline of the year so far, I believe, is a pretty easy one. And that is the fact that will the Hawks rebuild or won't they? This is a team that's at a period of a transition, I would say, potentially at least. They've already moved on from Kyle Korver as of the time of this recording and Paul Millsap firmly on the trading block. What are the Hawks going to be moving forward? They have a new ownership group over the last year and a half or so. And whether they are ready to kind of spend money and go into the next tier, potentially pay the luxury tax down the line, what they're going to do in order to amass a roster that's going to be good enough to do that. And that's been the overarching theme, is just what this team is going to do in terms of keeping the core together, or whether they'll blow things up and kind of start over again. Elsewhere, I would say, you know, guys who are better than I thought, I would imagine that Tim Hardaway Jr. fits in that class for me. I've kind of famously been low on Hardaway Jr., but he's now transformed himself into a legitimate rotation player, having a very nice year off the bench for Atlanta, as well as Dennis Schroeder, I believe, has slightly exceeded my expectations. He's been quite good for Atlanta in a new starting role as the team's point guard of the future. Guys who have been less good than I expected, you know, Kent Bazemore is the easy one for the Atlanta Hawks. He has struggled mightily after signing a 4-year, $70-plus million contract in the offseason. Kent has been kind of visibly pressing. His shooting has gone in the tank, and as a result, his overall play has suffered. I still believe that he could be a solid and useful rotation player in the future, but right now, Bazemore is pretty much struggling as badly as you possibly would imagine for a guy who's being paid at the level that he is. Whether the Hawks are a buyer or a seller at the trade deadline is very, very interesting. For me, I would say that I would hope that this team is a seller. We've already seen them move on from Kyle Korver in terms of in the way that they sent him off to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are obviously buyers, as always, with LeBron James on tap. But in terms of the Hawks, they made their first move was to sell. I believe that's probably the first of many, unless the team kind of overperforms. At the time of this recording, the team is won 6 straight games, and that kind of might slow things down in terms of a seller's mentality. But in the end, if I have to pick one, I would say this team is going to be firmly in the seller department. And if they go out and buy, that would be a mistake in my view. In terms of what they want to do, it's very interesting to see if they want to go on top and get another player. There isn't that obvious position on this team in which they will be able to buy. Wing is the need area for Atlanta right now, and I would imagine that they're not going to go out and do that because they've drafted 2 first-round wings in last year's 2016 NBA draft. Whereas if they sell, it will be a lot of the free agents to be. The Hawks have it was 9 free agents before they traded Kyle. Now they have 8 free agents on the Atlanta Hawks roster at the end of this season, and that kind of lends itself to a bit of a sell-off in that they'll not be able to keep all of those players. They could probably prioritize 1, 2, or 3 of those guys that they plan to re-sign and look to move on from a lot of the other ones if they do not value them moving forward. So guys like Tabo Sefolosha, Paul Millsap, even Tim Hardaway Jr., Mike Muscala, those are the kind of the names. Mike Scott, Tiago Splitter, those are the names that are going to be free agents. How movable some of those guys are, including Splitter and Scott, is up for debate, but if they wanted to go ahead and sell off, they could easily do that with some of these other more intriguing names. The key to the second half of the season for the Atlanta Hawks, I would imagine, is just kind of what they do in terms of the roster on the floor. I would imagine if they keep this group together, a success would be somewhere in that 4 or 5 seed range for the Eastern Conference. I don't believe the Hawks are going to be challenging the likes of Toronto, Boston, and Cleveland for those top 3 seeds in the East. But as currently constructed, if they keep the roster together, this is a team that's definitely capable of challenging to be in that 4 or 5 matchup somewhere. With the upside of being the number 4 seed in the Eastern Conference. In terms of success, though, I would rather them personally go out and try to make some moves, look toward the future, perhaps sacrifice some space this year in terms of the standings. Only because I think this is being the 4 seed in the Eastern Conference this season is not any great shakes, considering you would draw the Cleveland Cavaliers most likely in round 2 of the playoffs, and that's kind of a death sentence for anyone in the East right now, and that definitely includes the Hawks. So looking toward the future rather than looking toward the present and worrying about becoming the 4 or 5 seed in the East this season would be the smarter move for the Hawks. It remains to be seen whether the organization will be willing to do that, and there are plenty of off-court ramifications, including the fact that this is a fan base that's notoriously fickle. If they are not putting a competitive product on the court, it's going to be very, very tough to sell tickets, and that's one reason why the Hawks might look to avoid a rebuild. But from a basketball-only standpoint, it is certainly time for Atlanta to look in that direction, in my view, and if they're able to do that, missing the playoffs becomes a possibility, but that would be a short-term loss in favor of a long-term gain, and one that the Hawks want to probably at least explore in the very near future. You can subscribe to my podcast on very, very various levels of podcasting software: iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, all those fun places. TuneIn Radio, anywhere the podcasts are hosted, we are there, and I encourage you to do that. Thanks for listening.
Well, it's certainly going to get interesting. Thanks, Brad. By the way, Brad of Locked On Nets. It's pretty clear that it seems maybe the Nets will get in there, but if the Nets don't, then 4. The Hawks, 5 Indiana, 6 Washington, 7 Milwaukee. Our next team we're going to look at is Charlotte at 8. We heard about the Pistons the other day. We heard about the Bulls the extra day. The Hornets are a team I think should be far better than they've been so far. I've been really a little bit surprised by where they are. I thought they were heading in a better direction, but we'll let Doug and David tell you more about them in a second. I want to tell you about Indochino because I am wearing an Indochino shirt right now. I've become a big believer in the Indochino experience. It's really cool. You go to Indochino.com. Actually, they have 9 showrooms you can go to, but in most of our cases, we go to Indochino.com and you get to start picking. I mean, it's incredible. You can pick every single color and look and customize your lapels, your pleats, hundreds of fabrics. It's a showroom online. It's just incredible at Indochino.com. But the best part is after you've chosen what you want, then they make the suit measured to fit you. Instead of a generic off-the-rack suit, you get a personal experience with Indochino that makes you feel as though you have this made just for you. You know why? Because you do. It's just for you. No one else has anything like it because you've picked all of it. It has your own measurements. It fits you perfectly. And can I tell you, my suits look so much better that are Indochino suits rather than generic off the rack suits. It's quite a process. It's pretty cool. You can tell they're serious about making it great. You can go through your body measurements and you do all the different measurements and you send them all in and they make sure you're right and boom, there it is. And if you use the promo code LOCKED, any premium Indochino suit is just $389 at Indochino.com. That's 50% off the regular price made to measure premium suit, plus shipping is free. So Indochino.com, go through it. It's really cool. Promo code is locked, and any premium suit is just $389. I'm so excited. I can't tell you any more about it because I can't say premium enough times. Incredible deal for the suit. They'll fit you better than anything you've ever had off the rack. All right, let's go to the Locked On Hornets and see what they say about their midseason report. Because the Hornets, to me, are a surprising 20-19. I thought they would probably be fourth, maybe a little higher. No, probably not higher, but probably fourth in the East with the Wizards at 5 right there. And they're not right now. They might get there, but they're not there right now. Let's see what the guys have to say.
Doug Branson here, joined by David Walker. We are Locked On Hornets. Hornets talk for the hardcore fan. Looking back on the first half of this Hornets season, it has been up and down. It has been inconsistent at times, but it has always been interesting. Let's get into it. 5 burning questions surrounding your Charlotte Hornets. The first question, David, what is the number one storyline of the Hornets season? And this one is an easy one. It's defensive inconsistency. And not just the entire team being inconsistent one night to the next. We've definitely seen that. And I don't want to pin this entirely on the second unit because the first unit has had struggles stopping superstars and had trouble getting stops in the fourth quarter when they need it. But I think really it's the inconsistency between the first unit and the second unit, and Greg Popovich playing his starters in the second quarter, at the beginning of the second quarter, tells me that, hey, the NBA recognizes this. That's what's on tape now. That's what's on the scouting report, and more teams are going to attack this second unit with starters, and it's a scary thing if you're the Hornets. So that's my number one storyline of the NBA season.
Yeah, and it's frustrating, right, because you still see the ranking of the defense, and you know it's a good defensive team, and Clipper's a good defensive coach, but on some of these nights, it's just not playing, it's just not translating into wins, and it's got to be killing them.
All right, what's next?
This is who's kind of better than we thought they might be, and maybe who's not as good as we expected. For me, I hinted on this a little bit before the break, but Cody Zeller has been fantastic, I thought, this season. And going into the year, I wasn't sure if he could really step up and claim that starting center position and, you know, be a starting center in the NBA. But he's proven me completely wrong, I think, in my eyes. And it's the toughness factor. It's the strength with which he's attacking the rim on most, I mean, night in, night out, to go with the fact that he's not backing down from anyone. You've seen it with Dwight Howard. You've seen it with Hassan Whiteside. He's able to get under those guys' skin a little bit. He's a key cog in their machine right now. And I've been totally shocked by him. Not totally shocked, but just pleasantly surprised that he's been able to take another step in his game.
Yeah, who's been worse than you thought?
There's a couple guys I thought about here. Hibbert, I don't think has been what we thought he might be, especially after that first game. Maybe that was a little too much to expect from him. But I think you have to look at Marvin Williams, you know, and I feel bad about this one because I should have known, because you told all of us going into the season that we could see a little regression.
I don't
from
take
Marvin
any joy
year.
In that, by the way. I don't say I'm not smiling in the studio right now. I just felt it.
I can hear it. You smile a little bit. No, I know. Obviously, you don't. Obviously, no one wants that. And we all love Marvin and value what he brings to the table. But, you know, the 3-point percentage has fallen off, shot 40%, which was a career high last year, has not returned to form for that this year, shooting only 35%, and has just struggled from 3-point land.
I got to go with Frank Kaminsky here.
That was the other guy.
I really thought he would improve somewhat defensively, but this is. I don't even know if you can call this a sophomore slump because his rookie year wasn't it wasn't like Kristaps Porzingis impressive, where you would expect a little bit of a sophomore drop off. I really expected him to improve significantly, and it just simply hasn't happened. Okay, next question. Are the Hornets buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? If they are anything, they are buyers. This team is in win-now mode and win with the core of players that they've assembled on their starting unit mode. Win with the players they have. It would shock me to see if anyone off the starting five was traded before the trade deadline, though I think Cody Zeller still remains the most vulnerable of that starting five, despite them signing him to the extension. They have issues defensively on the second unit, as we've mentioned, and I don't think those issues can be fully addressed with the roster and the rotations as they're currently constructed. I think this second unit defense is baked in. The cake is baked. They have movable contracts, but in a year where normally attractive deals won't be as attractive because of all the cap flexibility due next summer, I don't think they're going to be able to swing a deal without including a draft pick or maybe two to sweeten that deal. So that's where I think they are. I think that they may stand pat because you got to look at the top of the East and go, you know, Boston surging, Toronto's playing well, Cleveland is Cleveland, and now you look above you and Atlanta, Indiana's getting better, Detroit's kind of finding a groove. I don't know if this is the year that the Hornets win a playoff series, and if that's not in the cards, then I don't know if mortgaging the future. I mean, I think they could probably figure some things out and maybe get to the playoffs, but I don't know if a trade is really going to send them to playoff win mode.
So if we're going to add something, if they're going to be buyers, you know, what are they looking to add to this team? And I think it's the thing that we've talked about recently, you know, some more shot makers, especially from the 3-point area. I think that's been a big thing that's been missing from this team last year. You know, they turned around their offense last season with the addition of Jeremy Lin and being able to hit that 3-ball consistently. Kemba's still been able to do it, but guys like Marvin, like we said, Bellinelli certainly helped, but they've fallen off from where they were last year, making, I think, 12% fewer 3-point shots than they were last year. So I think that would be what they would look to add. You know, for me, that's the biggest thing.
Well, somebody that has to come off the bench and they have to play defense. I mean, an Avery Bradley, a Thabo Sefolosha.
Yeah, so just go out and grab a 3-and-D guy. You know, nobody wants those, right?
I mean, right, exactly.
Should be easy to find.
Yeah, no, and that's the problem. They're going to have to give up so much overvalue of that player to acquire them because of the situation. And it's preventing a lot of teams from making a trade. It's not just preventing the Hornets from making a trade. This entire trade deadline has been quiet to begin. Finally, what will be the key for the Hornets in the second half of the season in order to call this season a success? On my mind, they have to get to the playoffs and win a series if they want to call this season a success. They have to play better defensively all around, but especially on the second unit. And they have to start making three-pointers. I mean, you can't rely on the mid-range and at-the-rim game that the Hornets have significantly relied on in this stretch. There's going to have to be a transformation of some kind if they want to get there. And I don't know if that's necessarily the smartest thing to mortgage the future in order to try to win a playoff series this season. They've got their core under contract for a while. It may be better to go in, and I don't know if anyone wants to hear this, but it may be better to go into the next offseason and just rethink that bench and move forward.
Be tough for me to be able to repick that whole standings. I mean, I think Cleveland, Toronto, Boston, but then I'm not sure who I think. I probably still believe Charlotte is four, or do I believe it's Washington? Are they playing that well, or does Milwaukee with Middleton get there? Atlanta, frankly, is two games ahead of everybody else. Why aren't I picking them? It's such an interesting group, and last year went down to the wire game to the game. I think it will. Trade deadline's going to play a large part of it. One of those teams coming on the other end of that trade deadline is the Miami Heat. Wes Goldberg and Dave Vermeil do a great, great show on Locked On Heat. They've lined this up beautifully in our preview edition of kind of what the goals of this team are. But now some of them gone short because Justice Winslow's gotten hurt. I'm not sure all their young players have played as well as they want. What is Pat Riley willing to do as we head into this trade deadline? Let's check in with Wes and Dave.
Hey, this is Locked On Heat. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanHeat.com. I'm here with the one and only David Vermeil, my co-host.
This is the only podcast dedicated daily to providing the latest news and notes on your Miami Heat.
All right, so we're going to do a quick season preview because David Locke, our boss, asked us to. So this is the first question. What is the number one storyline of the Miami Heat season, David?
Well, it's tough to say, but you know, unlike past seasons, the playoffs aren't a realistic goal this year. So although anything is possible, I think the reality is that this team's future matters more than anything else, and that's why we're trying to focus on that this season, trying to determine if young players like Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, and Tyler Johnson are potential building blocks or potentially expendable assets that can be moved for a franchise-type player.
I think the number one storyline of this season is next season. This is Pat Riley's toughest season yet, toughest test yet. He's lost some face now, I imagine, with some of the NBA players who probably sided with LeBron James and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade in their recent departures from the team. Riley hasn't landed a whale since LeBron in 2010. Now he doesn't even have Dwayne Wade's help to do that. So I'm not saying Riley can't, but this would certainly be the most impressive rebuild if he can. Now our next question. Who is better than you thought, and who has been less good than maybe you expected?
As far as better, I'd say Rodney McGruder, who barely made the team, was expected to start off the season with the D-League affiliate in Sioux Falls, and has proven to be a great surprise. He started 19 games this season, provides consistent effort every time. The numbers aren't particularly gaudy or impressive, but at the same time, he's just put in a lot of effort, and he's part of this young core, I think, that the Heat are looking to move forward. So he hasn't been dominant, but he's definitely been a valuable role player, and he's definitely exceeded expectations.
Magruder has been a wonderful surprise, but I'll also go with James Johnson. I simply didn't see this sort of versatility when he was in Toronto. Granted, I didn't watch that much of him before he signed in Miami, but I'm guessing he didn't show off this sort of potential since he was only able to get a one-year, $4 million deal in the first place last summer. Right. So I imagine he's been one of the league's pleasant surprises. I've really enjoyed watching him and everything that he could do. Also, I should mention Goran Dragic has been great, too, borderline all-star level.
You got it. So who do you think has been less good than you expected?
You and I have been critical on Hassan Whiteside throughout this season on the podcast. I'll also say Derek Williams has been a little bit of a disappointment. I know his minutes have been on and off, but you and I expected we expected him to be probably more of a consistent contributor, maybe somebody that can, provide some shooting and some scoring punch, and he just hasn't been able to do that.
Yeah, the skills are there for Williams, but he just hasn't been able to put them together in a consistent effort. And as far as Whiteside, although he's been particularly strong and arguably Miami's best player, I think the expectations for him coming to the season, particularly after signing a huge contract, were that he'd take the next step in his evolutionary process, become a more able passer out of the low post, develop some of those low post moves that are critical to getting, some repertoire offensively. And he just hasn't been able to do that. And so while he's been a solid defensive presence, he's pretty much stagnated in other areas of the floor. And that's not what we need from him.
He does the big things really well. I'd like to see him do the little things a little bit better and maybe focus more on those little things. Are the Heat buyers or sellers at the trade deadline?
That's a big question, and I don't think there's an easy answer for that. I think the reality is that Miami is in a position, based on their history, to do both. They could look to trade away players like Dragic or even Whiteside, who are the veteran players that could provide the best value to a contending team. But given their lack of draft picks, that's really all they can trade at this point. So we've seen Pat Riley take advantage of teams in a position of weakness in the past, and he could just as easily position the Heat to be buyers, even if the move to acquire a player who wouldn't have any real impact this season. Well, I think they could be both, to be honest with you. Where do you see this team being at the trade deadline?
This might be a cop-out answer, but Riley is an historic buyer who tends to sift through other people's trash to find his treasures. And whether or not the Heat trade away a star or try to acquire one at the deadline or try to move a player for a draft pick, I think Riley will view it as buying regardless, either a star player or maybe he's buying roster flexibility. I just think that's the way he's wired. That's the way he'll view it. All right, depending on depending on if the Heat do make a trade or not at the deadline, who are you trying to get? Oh, I'm going to screw this up. I got to remember how to fix this.
Yeah, he worded it weird, so I wouldn't worry about it. Who are you trying to get, either player or type of player? Who are you willing to move? So you have to just phrase it on your own, yeah.
So speaking of the trade deadline, who do you think the Heat are trying to get, and who do you think that they're willing to move maybe for that?
Well, I think at this point, the biggest key for Miami is arguably to get either a draft pick, having traded away a number of first-round picks for Goran Dragic a couple seasons ago, or possibly a player that has building block potential who might be in a team that's either struggled this season or might just simply be done with a franchise-type player and doesn't see them as part of their rebuilding process. So I think arguably a player like Boogie Cousins, somebody along those lines, or like I said, a draft pick. And if that's the case, then I think it takes probably moving a guy like Dragic, who's having a really, really good season and can provide instant offense to a legitimate title contender.
I mean, looking at who is most likely to be moved, Dragic is probably that player just because he's a more plug-and-play type of guy than Hassan Whiteside, who has a lot of value, but I think any team that acquired him would have to change a lot more philosophically, potentially, in order to wedge him in just months before the season ends for a potential playoff run. I could see the Heat dealing Dragic away for a first-round pick, maybe protected, something projected to be in the top 15, while I think Whiteside should be moved. I don't think he's a player that the Heat could build around. I just don't know how many teams are looking to trade for a big man on a max deal right now, especially when Boogie Cousins is out there as a possible option, maybe. Or you could get a much more bargain bin type center, say like Nerlens Noel from Philadelphia or something like that. Okay. What is the key for second half success for the Miami Heat this season?
Oh, I don't have one, to be honest with you. I think the first half of the season has been so difficult to gauge with the number of injuries, kind of forcing Eric Spoelstra to really juggle his lineups on almost a nightly basis. So it's difficult to say if any one particular player has to be more consistent or has to take a sudden leap as far as their production is concerned. So I would say it's just trying to continue to develop those key players little by little, seeing improvement on a nightly basis. As long as they're continuously building towards something, I think using the losing aspect of this season and the negativity that comes with it as an impetus to continue working towards something, a greater goal in the future, I think that's the key to success.
Yeah, this season is really all about development. The Heat are going to catch a lot of L's in the second half. In the second half of this season, we know that. So I think that ship has sailed, the winning ship, so to speak. This season's all about developing young guys like Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, the other guys. Maybe seeing if Winslow finds some confidence in his jump shot, Richardson staying healthy, Tyler Johnson becoming more consistent as a six man. Those would all be big wins for the Heat's future. Personally, I'd like to see the outlines of a plan. The Heat don't have a plan right now. They're sort of in limbo between being a piece away and a full rebuild. Maybe by the trade deadline, we'll know more about which direction Riley plans to go in. That's what at least I'd like to see. Anyway, this has been a little preview of Locked On Heat. So if you are a Miami Heat fan or just want to hear more about the Heat before your favorite team plays them or something like that, subscribe Locked On Heat wherever you can find podcasts.
It's been a disappointing year for the Heat. Be interesting to see how free agency works for them, because I think people still will go to Miami. Have you been to Miami? Miami's worth going to. All right, let's take one last final stop on our East report. Remember, West, we'll do it Monday and Wednesday again next week. Hope you've really been liking these. Tom Lewis has been covering the Indiana Pacers for a decade. Nobody knows the Pacers better than Tom. He really has great insight to the organization, how they work, what they're going on with. He's run Indy Cornrows and just does terrific, terrific work on who they are, has a good time with it too, has the history of the organization deep into it. So make sure you follow him and take in the information he gives, because Indiana's the mystery team to me. They are 20-18. I'm still not sure I buy into who they are. They're 10-9 this year against teams above 500. They're in the road. They're 5 road wins. They're 5 home losses. I'm still completely confused. They've got this masterful player in Paul George, and do they hold on to a playoff spot would be a question. But I'm not sure after listening to these that I wonder if Chicago, Detroit, New York, or Orlando is capable of making a run. So let's hear what Tom has to say.
This is Tom Lewis, host of Locked On Pacers, where we bring you a daily dose of news and notes about the Indiana Pacers. I'm here to bring you a mid-season report on the Pacers and answer a few questions about how the season has gone so far, starting with what is the number one storyline of the season? Well, for the Pacers starting the year, the team being turned over to Paul George is the number one storyline. Gone is his buddy and also team leader George Hill. To the Utah Jazz, gone is Frank Vogel, former coach that he leaned on heavily. The team is now his. They built some veteran pieces around him, and we all wanted to know, can he be the alpha dog, not only produce big numbers, but also lead the team? Now, it's been a struggle so far in the early season, but the team is coming together nicely, and several vets are starting to find their role. Jeff Teague, Monte Ellis now off the bench, Al Jefferson coming along as well. And it appears the team has survived some of the early issues and sorted out that playing rotation. Also, you know, the team had to deal with injuries, some of which were fortuitous because they forced some changes in the rotation and things have worked out. Speaking of injuries, Paul George had an ankle injury that cost him about 7 games and also kept him limited in several others. So a favorable January schedule, it appears that Paul George should be poised to go into superstar mode, and that's exactly what the Pacers need. Now, who has been better than I thought and who has been less good than expected before the season? A couple guys stick out. Thad Young has been far better as a stretch four option than I ever thought he would be. You know, last season he made 7 of 30 threes in 73 games with the Nets. And so far this season, he's already made 37 threes on 88 attempts, shooting 42% from behind the arc. He's been a real nice revelation from downtown this year. And if he can even come close to keeping that up for the rest of the season, it's a big boost. In fact, he's often earning a 3DS reference during games. Now, on the other end of that, he hasn't rebounded as well as I expected, and that's probably my fault. I didn't, you know, really realize his rebounding numbers in his career weren't that great. He's averaging a little over 6 rebounds a game, which is about normal for his career. He did grab 9 rebounds a game last year, which I guess was misleading me a little bit. So I guess I'll take the threes for the rebounds, but that is a struggle for the Pacers in general, rebounding, and Thad Young isn't really the answer to that issue. So hopefully he keeps knocking down the threes. Also, Jeff Teague started out less good, for sure. Really struggled shooting the ball early and then figuring out how to play next to Monte Ellis was a struggle, but he has really come around, and now the team has sorted the rotation a little bit. Glenn Robinson III is starting as a two-guard, and that's leaving the ball in Teague's hands to create. And over the, you know, his last 10 games, he's averaging about 17 points and 9 assists per game. Really has the offense flowing and playing at a strong level as expected. So one more guy I guess I'll throw in there is Robinson. At 22, he figured to be maybe a contributor off the bench, fill in here and there when needed. And injuries, as I mentioned earlier, really opened up a lot of playing opportunities for him, and he has been able to take advantage. It hasn't been all smooth, but he's getting more and more comfortable. And again, the last couple of weeks playing next to Teague, he's become a D and three guy, really starting to provide more and more value as it's leveled out the playing rotation, both on the starting and reserve end, having him in that spot at the two guard. So on to the trade deadline. Are the Pacers going to be buyers or sellers? Well, the Pacers are never going to be sellers, at least not while Larry Bird's around, seems like. I guess that could change, though, if all of a sudden, you know, after the Pacers have just won 3 games, they're at 500, and they have a relatively light schedule for January, one they should take advantage of. If they end up in January a few games under 500, things fall apart, then that could change the thinking. Absolutely. They do have a lot of veteran pieces that could be sold off for teams looking to fill a little gap here and there in the rotation. But in general, I wouldn't expect that. And I think the team is really trending in the right direction. Now, of course, also anything the Pacers do regarding roster moves has to include consideration of Paul George and his future with the team. Obviously, the Pacers are hoping he earns big money and will stick around. But if not, the offseason will be wild, and they're going to have to figure that into anything they do, even at the trade deadline in February. So if they were going to move a player or two, I think the move for the Pacers ideally would be to trade one or both of Monte Ellis or Rodney Stuckey. They're kind of a redundancy of a combo guard that plays similar, need the ball, aren't great three-point shooters, and the team really needs more wing depth, 3-and-D guy now. I mentioned Robinson. He's been doing that great. They need more depth. They need more of that. Guys who can knock down threes. Robinson's been shooting pretty well, but I wouldn't call him an automatic perimeter shooter by any stretch at this point. And if they could get someone who could fill it up and be a threat around the arc and also play some D, I think it would really help that full rotation out quite a bit. So if not a wing player, then maybe a player that could help with the rebounding, a reserve power forward of some type. Or, hey, if Paul Millsap wants to come to Pacers and they can make that work, that wouldn't be too bad either. So what is the key for second-half success? Good health, obviously a primary concern for the second half, with several veteran players. They have plenty of miles on their bodies. Keeping them healthy and playing key roles is important. But, of course, any success that the Pacers have relies on Paul George remaining healthy and asserting himself as the best player on the roster, capable of impacting the game at either end of the floor. So that's the latest on the Indiana Pacers. I'm Tom Lewis from Locked On Pacers.
All right, that wraps up the Eastern Conference. We've got them all covered for you. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you have a good vibe on it. Monday and Wednesday next week, we'll come with the Western Conference teams for you and get you more previews and updates. Remember, SeatGeek, download the app, promo code LOCK, Indochino.com. We'll give you the feel of your own personal experience with a measured suit. It's better than off-the-rack generic stuff. Do it at Indochino.com and enter the promo code LOCKED. Thanks very much for tuning into Locked On NBA. Welcome to drop 5 stars on an iTunes review. I'd greatly appreciate it. And please subscribe to your local team's podcast, also on the NFL, if you're an NFL fan. This has been Locked On NBA. Napa
Know-How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How. Napa Know-How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.